but you'll hope you'll enjoy that too. I asked myself a very big question. From wild to cultivated, can valued Soa Rica medicinal plants meet market demand sustainably and benefit local communities? Well, I'm first going to share with you that we have to define what are the valued Soa Rica medicinal plants. We have to define what the market is and what the market demands are, and we have to define what sustainability is, and we have to define what we mean by benefit to local communities. This is great. We have some music in the background here. I was actually supposed to do clinical trial research on Honlin and Olmose and Solomarpo, reviewing what we know about their reproductive cycles, their usage value and trade while sharing cultivation trials. Unfortunately, with the economic collapse, we're not able to get the full funding to be able to do that research. And I don't know what to do about this sound that's here. I'll just to wake you guys up. It's just before lunch. Thank you for that. And you know, I just will share a little bit of who I am and where my background is, so you understand orientation. I've lived in Nepal now for 25 years, and I'm an anthropologist, and I come from the aspect of income generation. And again, I share very much like Colum the essential necessity of when we look at cultural as well as biological diversity and how those can coexist. Cultivation is a really complex one because we're so early in this process. And when we say that we're swept through with ruta and mana, I mean, we have it here in Bhutan, we can find it throughout. Why is that? That's because we've been able to figure out how to cultivate those. And the challenge is that some of our very valuable ones are ones we just haven't really figured out yet even how to cultivate. And the question of should we even be cultivating them, I think, is a very important and valuable question. The small and very modest kinds of background research that I've done is simply looking at very highly valued herbs and seeing if we could grow them in the middle hills, that a farmer could grow them. And we were, and successful, and we use them and we make products out of them. You know, what are the valued Soa Rica medicinal plants? Well, that depends who you are and where you are. And again, I think that really emphasizes, following up on Colum's very valuable talk, that how localized this is by what the specific biodiverse regions, where are we? Where are we talking about, will highly determine what is being right now wildcrafted from those areas and what is considered most valuable. And it really seems to me that it's going to be very local, small efforts on trying to figure out if one is to be cultivating them, if one is to be trying to look at other ways. I mean, for us in Nepal, we have issues with the China building roads in on our northern sides. We see a lot larger demand for many valuable gifts. This is from the WWF. These are some of the kinds of valued plants that they have identified. I'll just go through these quickly. Many of you may know. You'll see at the bottom that these ones are ones that they are identifying as not vulnerable. We start to move into the vulnerable ones, and you start to see that there are products that are made alongside of them. You see highly vulnerable here with Jetamaicy. So obviously these are ones that where we really need greater work and research on the cultivation of them. Kutki is probably one of the some of the largest in terms of volume that comes out of Nepal's Himalayas. And again, what we have here is it's government protected, and yet the tragedy of government protection is sometimes what that does to the price in the market, means that the value is even greater. This is another one, not valuable. Again, Panchali commercially threatened. You can see these that are very traditional here, vulnerable. I believe that Martin, you'll be telling us a little more about Satua, I think, from little that I hear. So I want to show you about how, you know, NGOs now are very involved in trying to promote Himalayan herb production, and yet we don't even know what. There's very little understanding of what is to be cultivated and not. We have examples with chairaito, where they're in the East Nepal. There was a huge emphasis. We've got everybody, farmers, you've got to grow chairaito. Guess what happens? Everybody starts growing chairaito, so the price tumbles down, and so then there's a flood of the market. So these things are very complicated when everybody's sort of flavor of the month. It's sort of like investment. And to look at your herb portfolios and biodiversity as an investment of what are you going to go with a simple mass product that you know you can have at a, you know, that's inexpensive, your citronella, you can grow a lot of it, it's really inexpensive, you know, but you know there's a market for it and it's very, very, you know, a standard good market. Versus, are you going to go for some of these fancy exoticas, very difficult, which in fact are some of the hardest ones to grow and that have the highest value of return. The challenge is when we start to talk about benefit to local communities, and we'll get there, but I just want to show you some of these ones that are being promoted. These are other herbs that are being used. So really, what is the market? Outside, I'm not talking right now about local consumption, which is really where Colm was, which is really critical. And that is a very important issue, is the difference between cultivating, if you're looking at for local production, or are you trying to do something that's for export. You can see here by the facts, as that we all know, is the explosion of interest in traditional medicine. We also know, of course, the explosion of the herbal product market size as it continues to grow. This, I'm sure, very outdated figures. This is an old slide from probably about 6-7 years ago. I'd love someone here. I'd love to, hopefully we'll have, I'll be able to update that figure here at this conference. For European and American markets, there's something called LOHAS, Lifestyle of Health and Sustainability, is who they identify, who are the people that are most attracted to these kinds of traditional medicine products. And I just want to share something that to go on with what the ambassador, excuse me, we were told this morning about this very interest here in Bhutan, for example, in what's known as medical tourism and promoting that as a form of preservation of the tradition and also, though, of promotion of the different kinds of herbs. And so here, as we see, these are just some figures on tourism. And the issue being, you can see, of utilizing from natural traditional therapies. And what we have, so when we look, for example, at Thailand, and I believe that there's going to be tomorrow, I think there's one of the panels I noticed, which we should hopefully get, I would like to see some figures, because I've seen some astonishing figures, I couldn't draw them up for you right now, on the growth of the herbal industry that was impacted, of course, by the growth of the spa and tourism industry in Thailand. So obviously, you know, so you may ask, why am I talking to you about spa? I'm talking to you about spa as someone who came in interested in income generation in Nepal in a very small, simple way, how to impact on local communities. And you'll laugh saying, well, that's a long way. Spa is a long way from a local rural community in Nepal. But in fact, a lot of the issues are the complexities of looking at how sustainable actually many of the traditional medicines are, the complexities of trying to, it really makes no sense whatsoever to export these and is unconscionable. But the fact is that there's many principles within Soa Rigpa that perhaps are very exportable, and very useful. So this is just, again, some figures that show you about the growth of the that. So, and how are these demands met sustainably? So in Nepal, the Nepal Tourism Board, just in May, we invited the spa industry of Asia to come. We actually used it as an opportunity to create awards to recognize national treasures of indigenous living knowledge. And in fact, Gege Lama, a Bon Lama, is one of the recipients. He's here today at the conference. And partly this was a great importance of political maneuvering. It's true, Colm's absolutely correct, that if you cannot connect up people from remote and rural regions with centers of power, the difficulties for sustaining and preserving their traditions are profoundly challenged. So this is one reason why I say, how can we meet these demands met sustainably? Is one of our ways has been, as we said, well, we're going to have to start to emphasize method and technique and move it away from only being plant-based until we can get some better science on cultivation, etc. So we try to work on ensuring good. We work with the Mountain Institute as a private company trying to help us work with sustainability. But I'm really excited, and please come to me if you work deeply and have good sustainability models. My understanding right now, it's very complicated. We work with over 72 different herbs. And you know what? Each species, the way I look at it, each single plant has its own specific story. And how we understand its sustainability based on a reproductive is very important. I'm mentioning here some other work that's been done, analyzing the effects of different harvesting patterns for, this is for Gentamicin and for Kutki, and also showing at the end how Gentamicin is a little more sensitive. This is really important. This is the kind of research we really, really need to look at more. Understanding, because as the volumes are so great. These are, for example, in Sikkim, just to show you how the diversity is very different, what those different plants are in different areas. So who benefits, and can local communities benefit? And I really appreciate what Colum says when he talks about that, because there's, you know, even been studies been done as far as South America showing that when you start to bring in more sophisticated methods of working and transforming the herbs, usually the most marginalized and the pickers are usually the ones that least benefit from those changes, ironically and tragically. And so how can you actually look? This is picking amala and amongst the chepang. So how do we work actually at let's see here, we can stick here. One of the things that we did was, instead of trying to use fancy and exotic plants, we would sit and try to figure out very simple, literally we had refugees from the Nepal conflict who were going out and picking weed herbs and using those as our products. And so I think that there are some different kinds of ways. So this is an example of utilizing, we're right now working on it with the SNV, it's a Dutch NGO. It's something called the Great Himalaya Trail Project. It's trying to work on developing tourism in different areas in the Everest and the Annapurna region. And what it is we're trying to work at developing products locally, using local products that locals make themselves, and as simple as possible, that they can actually use for treatments and methods. And what we do, this here example is an example of Amchis working on enhancing some of their traditional kunye skills, etc. And so they use them in the monasteries, they use them also in their clinics, and obviously they utilize them for tourists, which adds to extra income without hurting the plants and without promoting necessarily plant aspects here. So I just want to end here. I just want to show you some of the again, really to emphasize. I'll end with this one. I just came back only a few days ago from Mongolia. Jan, I hope you can help me to identify this plant. It looks a little like snow lotus. This is one of the most sacred plants in Mongolia. It's called Vansembaru, and it only grows at a very sacred mountain called Otan Tengar. And again, it's considered not only a very sacred plant, but obviously a highly medicinal plant and highly valued. And so again, as in always, it's very important for us to understand and try to look at what is our actual motivation for the cultivation of these plants, and understanding why, and perhaps if we are inspired as well with a little bit of the poetry and the importance of that, while at the same time trying to emphasize other aspects. And I really just hope that we can get a little bit more more funding to really try to start to look very, very seriously at the efficacy of these plants. Dr. Mark Watson out of Edinburgh, who did the flora of Bhutan and is now working 10 years on the flora of Nepal, which has about double the amount of flora that we have in that actually is here in Bhutan. We have to realize that if we apply Soarikpa principles, there's probably a lot of plants that we haven't even begun to think about and haven't begun to think about using. But before we even begin to do that, let us see how, if in any way, we can start to work on the very, very complex process of slowly unlocking some of the most valuable herbs. And each person's going to have to do that in their own region, in their own way. Thanks very much. Thank you.